Hello and welcome to the Mighty Electronic Box for the week of something something. I don't actually know when this is going to go up, but it will be for the week of the week that it ends up going up. I think that's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just going to be a two-man cast this week. Joe sadly couldn't join us. We wanted to get one out because it's been a while since we did the last one due to various factors that conspired and not making us be able to record. But me and John were free. Say hi, John.
Yep. Yellow.
Sup. And we thought we'd, you know, record something about video games.
Yeah.
Yeah. What have you been doing?
I didn't really play that much. I ended up watching a lot of Salty Bet, which is I guess if you've listened to the podcast, you probably don't need me to describe it, but just for those who haven't, Salty Bet is basically a website which has a stream in the middle of it, which is just a 24/7 stream of the game Mugen or Mugen. I'm not 100% sure how to pronounce it. Mugen. Which is a weird PC fighting game. It's like a single-player fighting game where people can create their own characters and their own stages and just add them to the game. So this person who goes under the name Salty has downloaded like pretty big cast of characters. I think someone said like 2,500, but I could be getting that wrong. And basically just has them fighting each other it'll show two fighters. You get 40 seconds to place a bet in fake money on who you think's going to win the fight, and then they fight, and you lose all your money because you're terrible, which has happened to me a lot. So, I mean, the thing that makes it so crazy is that, like, there is no semblance of balance in the game. Because it's just, you know, it's just random people making these characters, so they're not thinking like, oh, I need to, you know, balance it against this character. And there's no multiplayer aspect, so there's no real reason to balance characters unless you're just, you know, a bit of a crazy person. So the crazy bits are when there's like upsets, when like a character that, you know, traditionally would just win easily is beaten by, you know, a scrub character, I guess. Or, you know, when a real match, as it's called in the Salty Bet chat, happens where like two characters are, you know, very evenly matched and it goes to five rounds.
It's the best of five.
Best of five. That's when people get pretty hyped in the chat. I guess, yeah, the chat's probably like 50% of what makes that thing so funny to watch. It's just some of it's pretty out there or like a bit raw in terms of the language that's used.
Is it moderated at all?
Not really. I think so. I think there's like a couple of guys who do moderation. The only stuff that I really see moderated is like stuff that's like spam or like, you know, just linking to other websites and stuff for no reason. There's multiple uses of the N-word in the chat, which doesn't seem to get moderated. People talk a lot about rape, referring to female characters, and it can get pretty rough in that chat. But sometimes, that's probably like 10% of the chat. The 9% is pretty funny. Just people, it's funny how that. I don't know how long Salty Bet's actually been around, but it pretty much got big as soon as Jeff Gerstmann mentioned it on his Twitter account.
I think he said on the podcast that it was a thing someone made for like Evo. Like to actually bet on
real fights.
Games.
Yeah, and then like when there's no tournaments happening, he just streams Mugen. I believe it was at like something like 300 people watching the stream at any one time before Jeff mentioned it on Twitter. It then went up to like 900 on the day that he mentioned it. Like I was like, that's when I jumped in. And now it's up to like 6,000 people watching it at any one time. So it's gotten pretty big since.
Is it a 24-hour thing?
Yep. There's downtime and stuff sometimes when something breaks. But there's still people.
This guy just leaves his PC running.
Yeah, essentially.
Out. Bandwidth bill must be something ferocious.
Yeah. He very rarely posts in the chat. As far as I can tell, he just doesn't watch the stream at all. which can make...
Why would you?
Yeah. So, like, when there's crashes, it can take a while for something to happen. I think there's, like, this one, like, dude who's, like, just below him in, like, called Cherry Warrior, I think is the name. He seems right. to be, like, he does a lot of the stuff. Like, he'll recommend fighters that should be taken out of the game because they're just...
Yeah.
Just too good or just terrible.
Does he have, like, a real-world contact for the guy who runs
it? I assume he does, because his stuff seems to get fixed once he notices it reasonably quickly after he notices it. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like, there's so many, like, shitty, terrible Dragon Ball Z characters that just have tiny sprites because they're all taken from, like, SNES fighting games compared to, like, the guys taken from, like, you know, the more recent fighting games. Yeah. So they're pretty much all terrible, except a lot of them have like one hit supers, which make them sort of unpredictable. Like if they were just in a stand up fight without supers, they'd probably get beaten against like most characters. But they can just like pull out a super and beat a pretty large amount of the characters in the game, which is pretty crazy. Makes for some good upsets.
So if you have two characters who have fought before, would the outcome be the same every time, or is there enough randomness in it that it could go either way?
I mean, the AI is programmed by the people creating the characters, so...
It's on like a character.
By that logic, like every round would be the same if it was like, you know, just the same AI going up against each other, and it, you know, that very rarely happens. So I would
they've all got their own different moves and stuff.
Assume if you had the same two characters fight each other like more than once, it wouldn't play out exactly the same. Unless like one character's massively overpowering the other character, they'd probably just win every time. But two reasonably evenly matched characters, you put them up against each other, it'd probably be quite close, but it wouldn't play out exactly the same way. And a lot of it can just come down to like random weird stuff, like a crazy super that just comes off, or I know. And sometimes the AI can get a bit stuck, and you know, crazy stuff can happen that way. So,
I did hear about it like a while ago, and I kind of wasn't that interested in it because it was like, oh, fighting game betting. Yeah, that doesn't sound great. And then when listening to it on the most recent Bombcast, I was like, oh, I see. People actually give a shit about this.
When Jeff first tweeted about it, I was like, that doesn't... It sounds like a weird thing that he would be into, but it just isn't for me. But, like, yeah, since I started watching it, like, I've watched it pretty much every day since then. And it's just a good thing to have on in the background. Like, you don't have to, you know, bet on every fight. So it's just like when you remember, oh, I've got Salty Bet up, I'll, you know, put a bet on the next fight or whatever. I've usually got it on one of my tabs on my computer when I'm, you know, on the internet and stuff.
I think I might have to have a look into it now. It's funny because I've been watching a lot of StarCraft over the last week. There was the WCS finals in Europe, Korea, and all of that, and I watched those, and that was good fun after just coming back off DreamHack and being really excited to watch StarCraft. But one of the StarCraft channels I watch on YouTube, like TV, they jokingly during one of their so they have a series called Inbox to Icebox where they get sent in hundreds and hundreds of replays from all the fans who watch the channel for their When Cheese Fails series, and all the ones they show on the When Cheese Fails series, they now have analysts who sit through and sift through all the replays for them because it used to take up loads of their time. So they get people to rate them now for them and then let them know which are the good games, so they only cast the good games.
Yeah.
And then they started this series called Inbox to Icebox to let people know why they needed these analysts. Basically, they just pick out games that haven't been rated at all. They could be good, they could be bad, but generally they're just absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
And then during one of the games, like they just talk about their daily lives. They don't even talk about the StarCraft game. They're that bad. And that's kind of the reason why you watch it. But during one of the games, they joked, it'd probably be better if we just casted AI versus AI. And so now they've started casting the AI, playing the AI.
Yeah.
Just like the hardest difficulty against the hardest difficulty. I'm just watching what they do. And it is pretty amusing.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound as random as Salty Pet, which is like, I can't imagine what it'd be like if you let people program their own StarCraft AI or something and then fought those. That'd be pretty funny. But it's a similar thing, and I can totally see the appeal.
Yeah.
Once you throw it.
I don't know. Yeah, there is something weird about watching AI play AI. I don't know. sort of crazy. Yeah. I mean, last week, or well, last time we recorded, I remember, like, you and Joe asking me, like, what my e-sport would be. I think Salty Bet is my
e-sport. Salty Bet is your e-sport.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, like, people fighting each other doesn't do for me. Like, having the AI fight each other is pretty, I don't know, it's pretty entertaining. Yeah, it's funny how the chat developed its own, like, lingo after, like, I don't know. It's just, it's pretty funny. A lot of people have their own sort of set of rules, I guess, to, like, what to bet on. Just, like, because, I mean, there's so many characters, it can be quite hard to just, like, know, like, oh, it's that character, right? You know, I know that he's, you know, pretty good. I'll, you know, always bet on him. So it's, like, always bet on swords is a good one. So, like, if a character has a sword, just bet on him, like, regardless. always bet on waifu. So, waifu, for people who don't know, is a really dumb term that people who love Japan say a lot. It's about like an anime girl that doesn't actually exist. People call them their waifu. So like waifus are just all the like stupid anime girls in that game, which there are a lot of. And actually a lot of them are like crazily overpowered. Just like ridiculous, just constant like laser beams coming out of them and flashing balls of light. It's just the other character just can't get close to them because they're just constantly spamming out attacks. Always bet MS Paint. So there's like a certain amount of characters that are just done on MS Paint. They're like not sprites taken from other games. They're just like, oh, someone's just like, fuck it, I'm going to make my own character. And like there are like three like MS Paint characters that are fucking like god tier, just crazy. Like... You look at them, like if you looked at them and compared them to like this sprite from, you know, like a actual decent real fighting game, you think, oh, that guy's gonna get destroyed, but no, they're just crazy. Yeah, all the they're just, you know, non taken from other games characters are pretty funny because they can just have ridiculous supers. Like, I don't know, there's Omega Tom Hanks and Omega Tiger Woods. Which is just like giant Tiger Woods head thing. It's just insane. Salty Bet's awesome. Watch like 10 minutes of it and see if you like it.
I think I gotta give it a go.
Yeah,
I tried Video Game Championship Wrestling and it didn't really
stop. Yeah, I watched a bit of that and it seemed interesting, but I don't know, I'm not really that into wrestling, so I don't know. It seemed like a good idea. Maybe if I got in at the start, it would have been more of the, you know, if I knew all the stories, it would have been better. But yeah. So actual games. I played and finished Resistance 3, which is a well-made first-person shooter.
Particular reason?
I signed up to like a game rental service because it had a free trial. I was like, okay, well, I'll get like three games for free that I sort of want to try but don't want to buy. And that was one of them. And it's good. It does some pretty interesting stuff with like going to places that like Apocalypse Stories sort of go to a lot, but like I wouldn't expect the Resistance series to go to. Resistance is like the first one is like. So it's like in the middle of like an alien invasion. I never played the second one, but I heard it was pretty terrible. So like, yeah, Resistance 3 is like a decent amount of time after the invasion where, you know, there's pockets of human survivors, but it's not like they don't have like any sort of organization. It's pretty much post-apocalyptic. And yeah, it does some good stuff with like human on human violence and stuff. And has a pretty interesting level towards the end, in a sort of, a prison, which is pretty cool. I don't know, it's all right. It sort of just ends, I guess. It doesn't have a fantastic ending, but the last hour or two are pretty cool. Some cool stuff happens there, but it's all right. I don't know, first person shooters are sort of tired now for me in a lot of ways. The gameplay's fine. The guns are pretty fantastic. Like, Insomniac are sort of known for their weapon design, I guess, like from Ratchet and Clank and Resistance. Like most of that stuff's pretty fantastic. Fantastic is how you say that word.
Usually.
It was just like, it was fun to just like mix up like what weapons you're using. Like, I find myself in a lot of games with like a wide variety of weapons, just picking one and sticking with it. But I don't know, that game, it's just fun to, you know, mess around with all the different crazy weapons. At one point, you get a sledgehammer, which is pretty cool.
It's a bit weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sort of makes sense when you get it, but yeah, I mean, you don't really use it outside of the bit where you get given it and you don't have any other weapons, but it's still pretty funny.
Nice.
There's also a weapon which it like mutates people with the Chimera virus, which is sort of what turned a lot of people into crazy Chimeran aliens in the first game. But it doesn't turn them into aliens, it just sort of gives them massive tumors on their face, and makes their eyeballs bulge out their head and then die. That gun's pretty cool. You don't get enough ammo with it, though.
Seems a bit unnecessary, right?
Yeah, it is. It's sort of really violent and crazy, but it's pretty good. That game's all right. I don't know. Like, it's solid rental, or like, I don't know, if you can find it cheap, maybe buy it, but I don't know. It's you know, it's a standard sort of first-person shooter, fair in a lot of ways. Let's see. I finished Driver San Francisco, which I think I mentioned last time.
You did.
That game has a really sort of interesting ending sequence, but then the ending itself isn't that great. It just starts to go off the rails with the coma stuff in a really cool way. Gives you some pretty weird powers, and then it just, like, once you're, you know, I mean, spoilers, you come out of the coma. Yeah, once that happens, it's like, oh shit, yeah, this game's sort of only fun when I have the weird powers.
It would have been great if it was just like, actually,
fuck it, just have the powers. You're just Superman or something.
You've got superpowers now, or you haven't been in a coma all along. Yeah. It was all real life.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. It goes back to just normal being normal, and then it just sort of ends at.
It seems like the worst possible way they could have ended the game.
Yeah, but I mean, they sort of wrote themselves into a corner, I guess. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's a cool game for while it lasts, and I like the addition of having like licensed cars and stuff, and a lot of licensed cars as well. It's not just like, you know, a few. I think there's like nearly 200 or something.
Oh shit! Really?
Yeah, you get some pretty cool cars. I think they've got like Lamborghinis, Porsches and stuff in there, so you get to drive some pretty fast cars. And like, I don't know, there's something about driving like a real car in like a city that's like just at ridiculously high speeds. It's pretty
Is it like open world?
Yeah, it's open world.
That's pretty cool, like having licensed cars in an open world. That seems like something I could get behind.
You can wreck them pretty badly as well, which is awesome. But I did that a lot by accident, but I think, yeah, the cool thing about that game is just like, oh shit, I'm about to crash, right? Just like, you jump out this car, go to the next car, right? That never happened. Just keep driving. The game's sort of really easy, but still pretty cool. I think I only played, oh yeah, shit, FIFA Street.
The new one?
Yeah, I hate to break it to you, but I didn't get it on the 360. I got it on the PS3 because it was cheaper.
What the fuck, John?
It was cheaper.
Was it cheap? Well, it was significantly cheaper, or did you just really not want to play it with me?
I really didn't want to play it with. No, it was quite significantly cheaper, and that game's pretty cool.
It's not very serious.
No.
It's also kind of broken. I don't know if you've got to the point where you've realized it yet, but the five-a-side mode is the best way to play it is to not do any tricks. It's run as fast as you possibly can and pass the ball three times and then slot the ball in the corner.
Yeah.
And that it's actually almost impossible to miss and almost impossible to defend. So it generally just devolves into you run up one end and score, the other person runs up the other end and score, and the first person to miss and fail to score loses.
Yeah.
That's kind of how that game ends up going, at least online anyway. But I don't know if you've got any online matches.
No, I haven't really played any online. I've just been playing the Korean World Tour mode or whatever it's called.
The World Tour is pretty cool. Like, it's got some interesting pacing, and it's got a lot more game modes that you can't play online.
Yeah.
So you get a nice variety.
Yeah.
I love the Last Man Standing.
Last Man Standing is cool. I played a bit with my brother as well, just split screen, which was played some of the, you know, the silly modes like Last Man Standing and like one on one, just first to five or something.
You can customize it as well.
Yeah,
you can
play
whichever mode you want with however many people you want. It's interesting.
Yeah, that game's all right. Doesn't seem like they're continuing that experiment at all. Like, I haven't found any news stories about a FIFA Street. I don't even know what they'd call it because there already is a FIFA Street 2.
Street 2. So, they'd just call it FIFA Street 2. I'd love that. That'd be amazing.
Like, they might.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because whenever they bring it back, it just never seems to do well. Like, they brought it back with FIFA Street 3 and made it all crazy and everyone was gangly and that was a terrible idea.
Yeah.
And then with this one, they were like, how about if we take the engine from real FIFA and then try and add more skills to it and more control? And it just kind of felt like the ball was just kind of like glued to your feet despite them having the actual realistic, you know, ball physics that they use for it. It still felt, you know, fake, I think was the problem.
Yeah.
But I liked it for what it was.
It's not anything you'd take massively seriously, but yeah, it's pretty cool. I think that was pretty much it for me for the last 1.5 weeks or however long it's been. Hmm.
Busy week?
Not really.
Yeah, at least not with the games anyway.
No.
I guess I should talk about what I played. My list is a tad bit longer than yours, unfortunately. But I don't know. I swear I've forgotten something as well, which is rather frustrating. Talking about stupid... I can't really remember what this was related to. Oh, yeah. When you were talking about playing against AI, it kind of reminded me of another game that I played this week. You know that Cloudberry Kingdom?
Did you hear of that?
Yeah, so that game does some interesting stuff. Well, not necessarily with AI, but just kind of with like randomness, you know? So if you haven't heard of Cloudberry Kingdom, it's a game where all the levels... So it's a platformer, and all the levels you can just randomly generate. Like, you just press a button, and it'll spit out a new level, and you can customize, like, how many checkpoints there are on the level. And then you can also customize the frequency of all the obstacles. So there's, like, a whole different bunch of jumping obstacles. Like, you can change the size of the platforms. You can change whether or not there are moving platforms, stuff like that. And you can change, you know, the frequency at which those appear in the level. And then you can go through and do the same thing for all the enemies and things that will actually try and kill you. And I think the point of that game is just to crank it all the way up to super, super crazy insane and then try and actually complete those levels. And by God, they are hard. Even if you put in like a ridiculous number of checkpoints, it's like Kaizo Mario levels of hard, where it's just completely bastardic like level design that no human ever really should be able to play. But that's kind of the interesting thing about it. The engine's quite clever in that it tests every level before it presents them to you.
Yeah.
So it creates like a whole bunch of different possibilities and then tests until it finds one that's actually completable. And some of the upgrades you can get, so you collect coins in the levels, these little gems, and then you can spend the gems on superpowers effectively. For example, the first one is slow motion, which obviously helps you make some of the trickier jumps. The second one is a dot that shows that's the third one, sorry. The first one is you can watch a replay of the AI completing the next section up to the next checkpoint, and you can just hit it and it just goes, and then you watch the path that it takes. And like when you crank it all the way up super, super crazy high, it's like pixel perfect, millisecond perfect jumps that are nigh on impossible to reproduce. But then you can turn on not only slow motion, you can also turn on the route that the AI took whilst you're running the course. And then you can try and follow along like a dot, and then it draws a line on the screen that the dot's going to run, and you have to try and follow it along.
Mm.
And it's actually quite clever because it does, you know, make it possible to complete these crazy, crazy levels. But also it's just extremely frustrating after a certain point. And just to rub it in, I don't know why they would have done this, but they've actually, every time you die, it just makes this noise. I can't even remember what the noise is now. I think I blanked it out. But it just makes a really annoying noise every time you die, just because they knew you would die a lot. And you'd hear that noise every single goddamn time. But yeah, that was interesting, especially as it reminded me quite a lot of one of my lecturers, not my lecturers, sorry, one of the people who gave lectures at my university is a PhD student who's actually, his PhD is on random generation of procedural generation of games.
Mm.
And a lot of the work he has done is this website called Games by Angelina. He's basically attempted to create very similar systems before, and I'm sure he must be aware of the game because he's quite clued in with the community interested in that kind of thing. But it seemed very clued into the kind of presentations that he had given us about the games that he works on. And it is an interesting idea. Like, he showed us one time this level generation tool for Super Mario World. So I've actually messed around with like the level editor. It's called like Luna something something for Super Mario World. And that there was some sort of AI script that I don't know if he worked on or helped work on, at least, that just spat out these broken-ass looking levels in Super Mario, but that were actually completable in a similar way to this game. It's kind of cool. And I ended up playing that because a friend brought it over and
Used around with it. There's a couple of things that made me not want to play Cloudberry was like, one, the movement looked a bit, I don't know, it didn't look quick enough, which, I mean, it was just a weird complaint. And then the other thing was, like, the thing that I loved about Super Meat Boy was, like, the genius of the level design. Like, the levels felt like hand-built.
Yeah.
And, like, having them just be randomly generated sort of, I don't know, it's not even really a mock against the game, it's just my sort of perception of it. Just like, I don't know. It did look really interesting, like, being able to, like, procedurally generate levels that are, like, really hard and work. And, like, the game itself can prove that they work is, like, that's really interesting, just as a conceptual thing. But
It's definitely really clever tech.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would put it on like the same level as the Super Meat Boy. Yes, the levels are hard, but it's hard in what I'd call an unfair way, whereas Super Meat Boy was definitely hard in a fair way.
Yeah.
Like, these games are intentionally designed to be frustrating. Well, not designed as such, but, you know, you can create ones that are easy to complete, but that's just boring. You're there because you want, you know, you're there for the masochism. More than Super Meat Boy, there was actually, like, it's something to be gained from that kind of masochism. Like, it was more structured. And I don't think I'll compare them that literally. Also, the movement's okay. I think it's just kind of the art style makes it look a bit slower. More than the it controls well enough. Like, there's definitely no qualms. If you make a mistake, it's definitely your fault, just like it is in Super Meat Boy. But it doesn't have the pace and fluidity that Super Meat Boy has that makes it more enjoyable to play. It's just a very bog standard platformer.
Yeah.
And then they made it really stupidly hard because fuck you. It does have multiplayer as well, which also makes the game significantly harder. Because you can change the color of your dude and everything, but it's still really, really easy to end up looking at someone else instead of yourself when there's only one route that you can take that doesn't result in you dying and everyone's standing on top of each other and you're not sure whether you've moved or not. There is a campaign where I think the levels are somewhat more structured, like actually created by a human being.
Oh, yeah.
And we were playing it three player, and then the guy who actually owned the game decided to make himself completely invisible.
That seems like that would be a problem.
He actually beat us on multiple levels in a row, just not even being able to see his character except when he collected the gems. That was the only time he knew where his character was, and he was genuinely beating us. It was kind of ridiculous. kind of crazy. Another stupid thing I did a few evenings later was I sat down for an hour with the friend and we went through the Xbox Live indie game section and just downloaded like 20 demos.
Yeah.
That is good fun. It was after we had just played Alpha Chimp again. I recommended that to them because of the terrible
He's
voice
so
acting.
Crazy.
I don't think they appreciated Alpha Chimp, I'm afraid.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
I finally got like one of my friends who had been bugging to play that game for a while to actually play it, and yeah, he loved it. So that's pretty happy.
That's good. That's good then. That's good. What did we play? So we played Avatar Running Physics. Have you played that one?
No.
It's so good. So it's basically Quap, but with the analog sticks.
Oh,
and
God.
It's so
that
fucked.
Sounds terrible.
It's so fucked. Because it's really satisfying, though. For like the first 5 minutes, I just kept on trying to move my left leg and then just falling flat on my face.
Mm.
And you can't put your arms out. So when the dude falls over, it's just completely ludicrous. And then when you do eventually manage to move the other leg, you just fall over backwards and then just land straight on your back. I really recommend you go look it up and give it a go yourself, because the only way I managed to actually even get to 50 meters was by doing moving my right leg only and just dragging my left leg behind me. I never managed to walk successfully. But it was really, really funny. Not like funny enough to actually pay for. And I think whilst I spent ages playing stupid indie games, I realized Microsoft really missed a trick by not making you able to make those games free.
Yeah.
I think if a lot of those were free, a lot of people would have been way more into that and gotten actually invested in that and maybe actually spent more money.
Mm.
Because there's a lot of people out there who put their games at like the minimum price just in hope that somebody even tries it, but I'm sure a lot of them would have gladly put their games up for free.
Yeah, probably.
Because a lot of them are just fun little experiments, and I doubt people put much time into them. I did talk about Mount Your Friends before, didn't I?
You briefly mentioned that it was actually good, but I don't think you ever talked about it in depth.
Oh, did I talk about what it was?
Nope.
The best description is like a dong grabbing simulator.
Dong grabbing simulator.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, you have A, B, X, and Y are all mapped to your hands and feet.
Right.
So A would be like your left hand. B would be left foot or whatever. I can't remember how it's set up, but it's just basically each one is attached to an appendage. And when you press and hold that button, the left analog stick moves it freely in rotation. And like, you can basically, it's completely physically impossible, but if you like start moving your left hand, you could drag your body like up and to the left by extending out. And when you let go of the button, it attaches to anything that's there. And so you start off and there's a goat standing on a tiny little wooden peg. It's like balancing on the peg, and you shuffle your way over by flipping all your appendages around and rolling over to the goat. And this isn't in 3D, this is in 2D. I don't know if you can imagine it. So, and then you stick like one hand onto the goat, and then you detach all of your other limbs from the floor, roll over onto the top of the goat, and then end your turn on the goat. And then it's a multiplayer game, so you take it in turns with an opponent. And your opponent has to try and beat the height that you set by climbing on top of you. And so you end up just climbing and you stack all of these people on top of each other. And you have to like climb up by sticking all your limbs to the people that you're climbing up. And all the people are randomly generated, so they can have like blue skin or crazy eyes and all kinds of shit. But they all they have in common is they're all male and they all have penises that have their own rotation and they just flop around. And so it's always amusing when you're climbing up someone, you just stick your hand straight on their dick as you're climbing up. And when you lock into position, once you get to beat your opponent's height, you stop moving. So all the rotation just freezes. So you try and set your dude up in like funny poses and stuff. And it's actually like really fun and strategic because there's loads of ways to try and fuck over your opponent. So like if you start building the tower off to a wonk, it'll take your opponent longer to climb up it than you.
Hmm.
And you can start trying to block them off. There's like a zone where you can't put people, but at a certain height you can then start putting people over that zone and then making it really, really hard to climb up and just fuck people over. It's actually really strategic and really fun. And also incredibly, incredibly stupid. So I do recommend you at least try out the trial if you're at all interested.
That sounds pretty amazing.
If you have a friend over, definitely try out multiplayer and give it a go, because it's so bloody stupid. And it has the most great epic music. This is totally out of place. Totally, totally out of place. It's really fun. What other stupid indie games do we play? Oh, we played this game. Oh my god. I can't remember the name of it. It was like Putanan. Oh, I can't even remember the name. It began with a P. It was absolutely terrible. But it was Bowls. the game was actually someone had remade Bowls, and you could play it as a giant humanoid cat that when you did a good throw, it would purr. It would like pump its arms and start purring, and then when you won, it would do like a dance and start meowing.
That sounds disturbing.
But it was Bowls, and it was like all set in space and like crazy and shit, and all the Bowls had like special power ups. So each like round of Bowls that you played, you would get a special ball that had an ability. So like maybe it would magnetize the little, you know, the little pip that you're trying to get it close to, towards you, or it would explode and knock all the other Bowls out of the way and crazy shit like that. But it was just Bowls. And it was like set in space, and there was this cat, and I really don't understand why they had to make Bowls so weird.
Yeah, that's really disturbing.
What else is good? Fanny Granny's Great Escape. I recommend you play Fanny Granny's Great Escape. Yeah, definitely another one worth looking up. It's basically, I suppose, like a runner, you keep going forwards and you have to avoid obstacles. It's like a lane. There's three lanes and you can swap between the lanes, and you're driving one of those disability scooters, mobility scooters. And when you swap between lanes, you do a barrel roll. You literally just jump in the air and do a barrel roll, and you have to jump over cars and collect coins and try not to die. And it has stupid music.
That sounds pretty amazing.
So yeah, the Xbox Live Indie Games is filled with quality titles like Fanny Granny's Great Escape and Avatar Running.
Or whatever. Yeah.
But that was good fun. I suppose I should talk about real games that I played.
Maybe.
Maybe. I downloaded Rimmed Capsule. I don't know how you actually pronounce it, but did you hear about that?
I saw like a picture of it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's like a boiled down strategy game. So it's on Android and iOS, and it's basically a very, very simplified real time strategy game where there's no like micromanagement. It's all just building, I suppose. All you do is build, and then you assign your little stick people, which are literally just vertical lines, to do jobs, and they go about and do the jobs that you set them to. And so it's set in like space. And you start off with like a stockpile of resources, and then you have to build corridors to connect all these buildings together. And then there's this like purple resource, which I guess you could equate to like your gas resource, which you mine from pockets of gas in space. And so every time you want to harvest some of that purple stuff, you have to put a purple room attached to a gas thing. And it's all really, really slick. Like the art design is really sleek. It's all just like colored rectangles and stuff, and all the tiles you place are Tetris shapes. And so every time you place a new building down, be it a corridor or an actual building, you get a new random Tetris piece shape, and you can see up in the top left like what the next Tetris shape is going to be and plan accordingly. So like whenever you'd get a long thin one, you'd want to make a corridor, because it's actually quite useful to try and expand really quickly to go get to these totems, I can't remember what the word they use for them. I think they're like monoliths. And these monoliths, you can assign some of your workers to research them. And if you assign them to do research on them, you get upgrades like your dudes can move faster, or you harvest more of the purple gas stuff quicker, and stuff like that. And I played one game of it, and it lasted over an hour. I played that in like one sitting on my phone without really realizing. I haven't gone back to it since, so I'm not really sure how great the replayability is. I haven't been that, you know, urgent to go back and play it again. But it was definitely absorbing for the first playthrough of the game. And it has an interesting strategy of like, because every so often waves of enemies will come and attack you, and you have to assign dudes to go stand in the defense room. But when you've got dudes in that room, you can't like mine and gather resources, build more rooms, and research the monoliths at the same time. But yeah, it's really pretty and controls really well on a phone. Like they really simplified it to make it easy to do on a phone for what effectively is a real-time strategy game.
Yeah.
With sort of like a wave-based survival kind of thing thrown in there. It was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I also played Beam NG, which they mentioned on the podcast, I think, recently.
Oh, yes. That's not really a game, is it?
No, it's... No. I mean, they're selling it.
Okay.
But I don't think that makes it a game.
Yeah.
I just played the demo. I haven't decided whether or not it's worth throwing money at it yet. It's like £10 or something, I think, if you want to throw money at the full alpha that they've got going at the moment, which has a bunch of different cars and some actual environments that aren't just a test environment. But yeah, the cars crash real good. I can confirm they definitely crash real good.
Yeah, I saw someone post a video of it, but I didn't actually watch it. It's like soft body physics or something.
Yeah. It's basically, you know, physics where the actual model of the car can deform.
Oh, some, right, okay.
Somewhat vaguely, realistically.
Yeah.
And like when it's actually like affected by the physics. So like in the video, they show it doing a barrel roll, and you can see like the body of the car like bend in midair as it like spins.
It's interesting.
On the forces. And yeah, it's kind of pretty. Like, I'd like to see tech like that in the next GTA or something to improve the way cars smash up. And it's definitely something I'd love to see. Also, Burnout's crash mode.
Yes, yeah.
With that physics, because that'd be absolutely stunning. Because crashing cars in that game is about the thing it does really well.
Yeah.
The cars do tend to want to die a lot quicker than they probably should. Like you drive over a slight bump and the tires shred, and then it does a barrel roll.
Over. Yeah, I can imagine that getting pretty crazy. At like, I don't know. Like if you do so, you like you have like an innocuous knock, and then like suddenly driving along, and then your whole car just like collapses or something.
I don't think it's quite that serious, but you will like go over a bump quite fast, and then have your wheel jammed inside. You know, it basically just crunches your suspension, and then all of a sudden you can't turn left anymore, and you didn't realize because you had been driving a straight line for such a long time. That does happen. I can't imagine what it's like driving the faster cars as well, because in the demo they just give you the shitty pickup truck. But what is cool about it is they let you fully customize every single part that's on the car. So the car is made up of, it's not just a, you know, car model, it's actually made up of the individual components. For example, if I wanted to take out all the brakes, I could, and by just removing all the brake discs on the car. And if I wanted to, I don't know, remove the rear shocks, the shock absorbers, I totally can, and then the car just bounces around like a freaking kangaroo. which is pretty fun to mess around with. Also, if I wanted to remove the front wheels, I can totally do that, and then see what happens whilst I'm doing like 100 miles an hour. So yeah, kind of interesting, but not really a game, I guess. Nah, it's not a game.
Yeah, I don't think it counts as a game, but it does sound really interesting. I'm sure those stuff. God, when was it? I think it was like when Gears of War 2 came out, that people were getting really hyped about soft body physics, and then nothing actually.
I'm pretty sure a long time ago I did see a demo for what was probably this exact game. I remember seeing something very.
Yeah. I definitely remember seeing something with a car getting effed up, but
yeah, I don't know if it is the same guys and they've just been working on it this long.
Yeah,
to try and get it into an actual, you know, thing. I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, that's tech that needs to happen. It does, you know, kill my PC though. It's a reasonably nice looking game, but when I cranked the, you know, how much do you want this car to smash up button all the way up to high, and it was like, oh, frame me when I start crashing into things. Just hardly surprising. I do like that it actually has a built-in slow motion feature, though. So you can just hold Alt and then press like left and right to slow or speed.
That's pretty cool.
Speed up the game in the middle of like actually playing it, which is pretty damn sick when you want to watch it smash up in super, super slow motion.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I played a bit more Dirt 3, but not really much else to say about that except fuck Jim Carn.
Yeah, Jim Carner can be really tough.
Especially when you're playing with a godforsaken racing wheel.
Yes, and like playing in first person and stuff, it's just crazy times.
Oh, that shit. I had to get a friend to do it for me, and also a friend who had played the entire game before, and then he was incapable of doing it as well. So we plugged in an Xbox controller, and then he did it on that, and he still had to turn the car to automatic to actually be able to do, like, the, you know, the one that's Gymkhana Attack or whatever it's called, where you do it all in, like, a straight line, and you have to hit each trick and get
three triangles
on each one.
It's really tough.
Yeah. You had to put it on automatic to be able to actually get past that. It's, God damn it. Yeah, it's actually, like, severely putting me off, like, game every time I see one of those events, and I'm glad I haven't actually had to do them, because I don't find it enjoyable at all. The rest of the game's stellar, though.
Yeah, like, this game's awesome. I think the good thing they did with that game is it doesn't require you to do every single event in every single thing to, like, progress.
Like, I guess so, but I'm kind of sadistic about
it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I am the same, but it's like, I think it's cool that you can just sort of be like, I don't really like this type of event. I'll skip that and, you know, move on to the next area or whatever.
That is true. I should probably. I have been actually doing that when, you know, when I'm playing it on my own, just skipping past the Gymkhana ones.
Yeah.
Because you can. Yeah, it works out. Works out for sure. What I do love is how the AI drivers are quite fallible. Like, they do make mistakes.
Yeah.
And you'll be driving around a track, and then all of a sudden this dude will be fucking backwards in front of you, and you're like, oh shit, and then have to try and dodge them.
Guy just, like, flips over your head as you're, like, driving past him or something.
I was doing one of the ones where you drive one of the buggies, you know, the rally cross or whatever it is. No, the truck one. What's it called? The class of Land Rush.
Yeah, Land Rush, yeah.
I was doing a Land Rush, and I came over this thing, and this car was losing control, and then it literally landed on top of my buggy.
Yeah.
And then bounced off and flipped over, crashed into someone else. Really cool.
Yeah.
It's a shame the replay feature doesn't let you follow other cars. It only lets you look around whilst you're driving up.
Land Rush can be pretty crazy. I remember, I think it might have been D2, actually. There's, like, one specific track where there's a jump quite close to the start, so all the races would be reasonably close together at the start, and, like, 8 cars would go over this jump, and about 4 of them would still be, like, on all 4 wheels at the end. Like, you turn around, there'd just be 4 cars, like, on the backs or something. Because all the cars would just collide with each other in the air and just go off in crazy angles.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty...
I bet. I managed to actually make someone not finish a race by flipping them over. It just said they DNF'd at the end of the race, and I was like, oh shit, properly wiped someone out. That was awesome. I also I started playing Dota.
Oh god, Brad.
It's alright, I don't think I'm gonna... I enjoyed it. I did play quite a few games. I played, like, I don't know, 10 or so games over the last week and a half, and it's good fun. I think it's better than League of Legends, like, as a game. Because League of Legends is quite simplified, and I do appreciate the extra, like, slight a bit of extra depth in the, you know, the options you have in Dota.
Yeah.
But it's just more of that, and I'm not a massive MOBA person.
Yeah.
I can enjoy them occasionally, but I'm not going to get addicted.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I have liked about Dota is a lot of the stuff that Valve has done with the actual client and the actual usability of the game is very, very clever. So. One of the best things they've done is the guide system, where you can just pop up in the top left corner all of the user-created guides sorted by rating order. Like, whilst you're in a match, you can just join into a match. So what I've been doing, which I didn't do in League of Legends, because obviously you have to pay for champions in League of Legends, and you don't have to pay for heroes in Dota, but I've just been clicking the random button. That's been like, okay, don't care who I play, I'm just going to play anyone, or getting people to suggest who I should play, and I know what none of these characters do at this point. And that's something that's obviously really important in a MOBA, is knowing exactly what everyone does. But I've just been able to click on random characters I've never played before, go up to the top left, pick a guide that, you know, is high rated and sounds pretty good. And then it just, in the actual game itself, highlights all the skills you need to upgrade. It brings up all the items that it tells you to buy, and you just, like, right click on them in the shop. They're all, like, laid out for you. And it's like, these are the games you buy, the items you buy straight away. These are the items you should start trying to buy once you start getting gold. All of that kind of stuff is just, like, spelled out for you. You know exactly what you're doing, and you can be competitive and do okay as long as you have basic understanding of, you know, how a MOBA works without putting any effort in. And I think that's really, really awesome, because it just allows you to have a bit more fun just by experimenting and playing, you know, whatever hero you really feel like playing, which has been kind of cool. And the other thing I really love is they're, I mean, I don't particularly care for watching Dota. I really, really enjoy watching StarCraft. Like, I find that seriously interesting to watch and do devote a lot of time to it. And I don't think I ever will with Dota. But a lot of the stuff that they've done in the in-game client, like, you can spectate live games that are being, like, streamed out over Twitch. And I think there's actually some degree of Twitch integration that Brad was talking about on the Bombcast. I don't know if you remember that.
Is that the thing where you can, like, link your account and get drops and stuff? Yeah, that stuff all sounded insane.
But I think if you know the viewer count on Twitch for how many people are watching a game, I think if you're watching in the client, you count towards that viewer count that appears on Twitch. I think. I'm not 100% certain, but I think it's linked in that way as well. Yeah. But the main thing about that's really cool in the client is you can just go into a game and watch it like super, super high quality on a really, really low bandwidth. So I can watch at best like a 360p stream on my home internet. In the client, I can watch it, you know, it's as good as if I were playing the game myself, which is better than the higher stream quality.
Yeah, yeah.
I can set it to follow the exact camera movements of the guy who's casting the game on Twitch anyway and get his commentary straight into the game, all on my shitty, like, 200 kilobytes a second download speed, and it'd be an absolutely perfect, flawless experience. And even if I want then, in case there's something else happening that the caster's missing, I can turn the caster off and just go look at some other part of the map or look at whatever I want to look at.
Still
keep hearing his commentary, and it all be in that great quality. And I think not only is that a really, really cool system, but on top of that, during the game, they have these little pop-ups, these little factoids, which I think are really, really clever for getting new people in who maybe don't understand the game. So, for example, there was one that popped up explaining just like what an item is. Like some character bought an item and the commentator was talking about it. And then this factoid pops up that says, oh, this item is blah and people buy it because X, Y, Z. And like 30% of the people who play this character buy this item because it's really good. And it just explains, like, that little bit of explanation, like a little sprinkling, like once you understand the base mechanics of the game, it is kind of useful information that helps you understand it a bit deeper.
Yeah.
And I think something like that is what StarCraft really needs, to bridge a gap between the people who kind of vaguely get what's going on but might not understand why you would get a 13 gate over a 12 gate. Like those kind of things, like, don't mean anything to anyone, but if they could have these little factoids pop up just built into the game to provide that little information, I think it's really cool. Another one is, like, even for people who also watch a lot of the game, there was one that popped up, specifically information about pro players. It's like, it was like, oh, this player plays this particular hero more than any of the other heroes, actually two times as much as any of the other heroes that they play, and it's like their signature hero. And I thought that kind of like little factoid information was, you know, interesting and actually really useful. And that's all just baked into the client, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
And I do think Valve is doing something really clever.
Yeah, they are doing really interesting stuff. It's just a shame that it's not a game that I'm particularly interested in myself.
It's also a shame because I don't think stuff like that will necessarily make it over to StarCraft, because a lot of the Korean, you know, the Korean scene where that stuff's really popular over there, they're very secretive about it. Information they get, like, they don't release replay packs, for example, because they don't want people studying the games.
Yeah,
that kind of crazy shit. And Valve are like very just out there, just like everything's open. You want to analyze every minute of every single pro game ever. Yeah, it's available to everyone at all times, which I don't think that kind of openness is going to happen in StarCraft, unfortunately. No. But yeah, I guess that's kind of what I played. I built a PC.
Really?
Yeah, earlier today. not for myself.
Oh,
a friend,
okay.
Was getting on the PC bandwagon, put his PC together for him, and it seems to be working so far. So
sweet.
That was fun. I did it a bit faster than last time. I think it took me about 3.5 hours this time. It's all right. It's all right. I fucking hate cable management. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I hate cables.
I
need to live a cableless life. Even just, like, having a guitar with, like, a couple of cables going into like an amp and an effects pedal really just pisses me off. And like,
you need to get one of those wireless adapters for the amp.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Just my
dad plays a lot of guitar, and he sits like in the lounge with his, you know, his guitar plugged straight into his amp. And even he was like, I want a wireless one. And you sit right next to that. He said, no, I want a wireless one.
Yeah. Anything more than like two cables is too many cables.
Yeah. Well, this PC had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. At least like 15 or so cables.
Oh, God. That sounds like a nightmare.
And some of them are really bloody thick and like impossible to. Oh, no, wait, probably two more on top of that. Yeah. A lot of cables.
Yeah.
But I was quite pleased. Like, I didn't have to look much stuff up. I kind of remembered what I was doing from last time.
It's, cool.
Good fun again. Did I mention I bought a new keyboard last week?
I don't think so.
Oh. Well, as kind of related to, I've been doing some work in the real worlds over the summer. I got a job. But I decided to, with my first paycheck, go and buy myself a stupidly expensive keyboard because it was really nice. It's a mechanical keyboard because I've been toying with the idea of getting a mechanical keyboard for ages.
Now I think you did mention it.
Did I mention the Ducky Year of the Snake?
What?
Shine? It's a Ducky Shine 3. That's the make and model, but it's the Year of the Snake Special Edition. And
Does it have a snake on it?
It's got a snake on the spacebar.
Oh, yes.
It's one of 999 keyboards being made, and it's got a aluminium body. Like, it's all aluminium, the keyboard, except for the keys.
That's
and then
insane.
The keys are mechanical. Yeah, it's really sexy. And it's all like, the reason I really like the Shines is they have these really stupid backlighting modes. Like, it's a Taiwanese company, and they understand that, you know, having fancy lights on your keyboard is more important than having a nice keyboard. But, it basically has all these ridiculous backlighting modes. For example, there's one which is snake, like it just go all the keys light up like a snake, the game Snake, and then it goes down the keyboard row by row. And you can make it so that every time you press a key, it lights up and then expands outwards from the middle from the key you press. But my favorite one is you can make it every time you press a key, that key lights up and then it fades out. So you just press, when you jam on all the keys, they all just like light up and then fade out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. But also terrible for typing in passwords.
Someone
looks over all your passwords. The keys are lighting up.
It just becomes like an anagram.
And fading out. It's not even that, because they all fade out.
Oh,
the same
yeah, yeah.
They lit up, so it would literally just be in order, all the keys going out. It's brilliant. Brilliant. But yeah, it's a pretty keyboard. So that's what I played this week, and that brings us to news, of which there might have been some.
Yeah, not much, but
you had a news story that you wanted to say, which I totally didn't understand. Do you remember what it was?
Wait,
you tried to explain something to me, and I didn't write it down, and now I've completely.
Was it the Ouya thing?
Yes, the Ouya thing.
Oh yeah, okay. Oh god, this is really dumb. It's not even really news, but it's pretty funny. So
more news than anything else we've got.
Yeah. So there's a game around called That Dragon, Cancer.
Sorry, that name is.
Yeah, that name is pretty bad. Anyway, which is a game about having cancer, or someone in the family, the character you play, has cancer or something. And Ouya. The Ouya recently got that as an exclusive, and their official Twitter account posted a tweet, I think it was yesterday or the day before, saying I'll have to find the original tweet. It was pretty amazing. Here we go. The powerfully moving That Dragon Cancer is now an Ouya exclusive. Get some. With Get Some in caps. To which a lot of game journalists then, you know, took offence or just started taking the piss out of Ouya, basically.
I don't think it's anything to take the offence at that point. It's literally just, you're a moron.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the piss out of you.
Whoever wrote that is a moron. Yeah, and then so like Alex Navarro was one of the first people to jump on that. And he got a tweet off someone who I assume works at Ouya, like a PR dude, who said, "We meant to say get excited and get the game. Email me if you'd like to chat." And then Alex Navarro just said, "Too late, have cancer now," which is probably the best response I could have thought of. The Ouya just seems like a complete mess, and this only serves to exaggerate and emphasize
the
that
Ouya's catch line is now get some, comma, cancer.
Yeah. Oh god, the Ouya. How the hell isn't the Ouya getting exclusive on a game about someone having cancer? Like, but that just doesn't seem like the sort of game they would go for at all. That just seems like something that would come out on Steam and like no one would hear of ever.
Maybe Steam were like, nope.
I don't know.
And then they wanted to get news.
You were jumping on that hot cancer game market.
That hot cancer market.
Yeah. Well, no one else is making games.
Better than the cold cancer market.
Yeah, that market sucks.
Frigid.
Oh god, it's terrible. So terrible. Oh man. Okay.
Let's start with the real news.
Yeah. Now, yes.
The Xbox One will be launching in 13 regions worldwide. Microsoft came out and said there's a whole bunch of places in Europe they can't be asked to release the console.
Well,
fuck Europeans.
That might not have been their exact wording, but
did they explain why they're not releasing it in those regions? Do you reckon it's to do with the rumored stock, not stock issues, the manufacturing issues that they've been having with the SRAM stuff?
Well. Okay, there are many factors that determine the timing of specific market launches, said company CEO man number 5. This includes work to localize the Xbox One Dash, incorporate additional voice and languages, and build partnerships to bring out some meaningful local content to each country. I mean,
what about the games? I'm sure a lot of people in those countries wouldn't give a fuck if their dashboard was English for a few months and they could just, you know, play games.
Yeah, I don't know.
I reckon that's a load of marketing bullshit, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it is.
I do really hate in the world we are in today of the internet and shipping taking like a few days transatlantic, that, you know, America has to get everything first still, and loads of European countries get shafted.
Yeah.
It does, like, I don't know, it just seems ridiculous. Especially when, like, digitally released games are delayed because, for no apparent reason whatsoever. It's like, I don't understand why that's still a thing. And I do hope that if there is an all digital future, that that is not something that, for some godforsaken reason, is part of it.
Yep. So, I mean, the eight European countries that were affected were Belgium, Denmark, Finland, the Netherlands, Norway, Russia, Sweden, and Switzerland. So that's...
Oh yeah, Russia, the most European country.
Yeah, well, they don't deserve a fucking Xbox. Fucking bigots. They must just be taking anything that's even remotely gay or lesbian out of the fucking Xbox One in Russia, or they'll be shot by Vladimir Putin. He'll do some judo on them or something.
Oh, wait, where did you get this bigot story about Russia from?
Have you not seen all this stuff about Russia? Like, they're totally like anti-gay now.
Oh, I think I did.
And like any gay Olympians, because they're hosting the Olympics in some time. I don't know when. Will be like chucked out or something.
What is wrong with their government?
Yeah, it's there's a lot of things wrong with that country. I don't know. I don't want Vladimir Putin to come to my house. I'm not going to say anything. The KGB are listening.
This is worse than when we used to report North Korean news every week.
Yeah, I would just do Russian news. Who does Russia hate week? Now?
This week, why they hate the gays.
Next week, report on, I don't know, Sikhs. Suddenly
Judaism.
Yes. Oh god. Russia. Yeah, I thought Russia was starting to become cool.
Everybody's Russian.
Now Russia sucks.
Did you ever see that? Well, first of all, do you remember Rebecca Black?
Yes.
Did you ever see the parody video that someone did of the Friday song?
There were a lot of those.
He dubbed his own voice over it and then just took the piss. It was if you have seen it, you'll remember this bit. You know the bit where the guy's sitting in the car and when she's sitting in the car and she's doing that wavy thing with her hand, like up and down. Do you remember that?
That rings a bell.
He dubbed it and said, "My hand is a dolphin." It's a really good video, but yeah, I don't know why I brought that up. Moving on with the news, EA in another move to try and not seem like greedy corporate bastards have released a new humble bundle. It's all EA games. It's called the Origin Humble Bundle, and all the titles. In fact, a lot of the titles actually are redeemable on Steam as well for some reason.
Yep.
At least all the ones that weren't Origin exclusive. But the list of games includes Dead Space, Dead Space 3, Burnout Paradise, Mirror's Edge, Battlefield 3. If you pay above the average, The Sims Star Tradition, Sims 3 Starter Edition, if you pay above the average, and one game that I've forgotten.
Mirror's Edge?
I said Mirror's Edge.
Shut up.
I definitely forgot one of the ones that was in the...
Did you say Crisis 2?
Crisis 2, that's the one.
Okay.
That game deserves forgetting.
So wait, Dead Space and Dead Space 3 are in, but Dead Space 2 isn't?
Yeah, the good one.
What are they doing? What, like...
Yeah.
That's so weird, that just doesn't make any sense.
I don't understand.
Like, why not just put Dead Space and Dead Space 2 in? Because then, Dead Space 3 is reasonably new, so they could sort of...
But they've already given away Dead Space 3 recently, so they've losing anything to give it away again. They gave it away after the Sim City fiasco.
Okay.
That was one of the titles a lot of games.
Does that mean Dead Space 3 didn't do very well?
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it probably didn't do as well as they were hoping.
Or
maybe it did, and then they just don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just stopped selling enough to the point where they're just like, fuck it, I don't know.
So, I mean...
But yeah.
It's good to see, big publishers getting in on this. I mean...
I haven't said the most important part yet. EA have agreed to give all of their proceeds directly to charity, so they're not taking any cut from this.
I thought the thing was you can choose to have that happen.
So the way the Humble Bundle normally works...
Yeah,
it's split three ways. So it's split to the Humble Bundle team get a small cut, or can get a small cut because all of this is user choice. Charities or whatever charities that particular Humble Bundle is dedicated to get a cut, usually the largest cut, and then the developers of the game also get a small cut, which is what happened with the THQ bundle. It went to THQ for the games. In this particular instance, EA have completely removed their cut and just made it all charity and Humble Bundle team. So basically they've given up their whole cut and just said all of it will go to charity. We don't want anything.
Okay.
So although normally you could choose to give it all to charity and not give it to anyone else, in this particular case, you can't choose to give money to EA.
Yeah.
Even if you wanted to.
For some reason, them being way more charitable just makes it seem more slimy and horrible.
Yeah,
If they were it's just a normal Humble Bundle, then I probably wouldn't even notice. But them being oh no, everything goes to charity.
But, I mean, the selection of games they put out is actually...
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome that they're doing it just as... it's awesome that, is it Child's Play or is it just random...
There's a whole smash. Multiple charities, actually.
I mean, charities...
It's already sold, $200,000. It's already... made and it's been up for a few hours.
That's cool.
So it's going to make gangbusters for charity, which is kind of
good. That selection of games is pretty amazing for a pretty small amount of money.
I threw $5 at it and got all the games, including even though I already had a bunch of them, the keys are all individual, so I'm just going to give away the keys I don't need to my friend.
I'd probably buy it, but I know for a fact that none of those would run on my laptop, so
yeah, that's
almost
that's
pointless. I may as well just give, games. £5 to charity.
Yeah,
basically the same effect.
But yeah, for £3.33, I got all of those games.
Yeah, yeah, that's all.
And that's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
But in an awesome way. And like, The Sims comes with two DLCs, and also you get a bonus free DLC mm-hmm. on top of that. And you get the soundtrack for Battlefield and the soundtrack for The Sims.
Yeah.
For £3.33. It's kind of crazy.
It is. Yeah.
They can just do that. That's kind of mad. Kind of mad. Okay, next up in our list of news is John Carmack has joined the Oculus Rift team as Chief Technical Officer.
Yes,
I believe.
And this means he's left EID.
Oh, did they come out and say that he's
unless he's, you know, this CTO at Oculus while still working at EID.
Did you not see the press release from EID when he announced this move?
Oh, no.
The press release specifically said this does not affect his current position within EID Software.
That guy's crazy.
Yeah.
To be fair, that guy has like the brain power to be in like
that guy has
five different
in every
companies.
Single pie. Like, yeah. He was originally working on the very, very first development kit of the Oculus in his spare time, writing drivers for it himself, duct taping that thing together. So he is clearly all the way invested Oculus already.
He's a crazy dude. I think we've already talked about following his Twitter and it just being just a complete fucking techno babble, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful poetry at the same time.
Yeah.
Like
he tweeted once and I understood it and I got really happy.
Yeah, that guy's a genius.
He tweeted about functional programming and I was like, yes.
So him, like him,
I get that joke.
Being really like in depth with Oculus is awesome because he obviously, you know, knows his his technical stuff.
And as I mentioned before we started, hopefully a friend of mine is getting an Oculus sometime in the near future.
Awesome to someone who's played one.
I am pretty excited. My friend is already deeply on board with it after his first experience with it and went out and bought one. So apparently the thing's pretty good and I really do hope that it gets picked up. Like a lot of people do seem really excited, like genuinely about it. So I think it'd be really interesting to see when the proper consumer version comes out, you know, how well it's received. Because it seems exciting. One thing I do want to say, did you see, what's his name? Alan Ratliff on the Jump on Forums. He did a post of him, I think it was him. I might have been wrong about that, it might have been someone else. But he did a post of him playing one of the Tuscany tech demo.
Oh,
with
is
the
that
Razor
like
Naga.
the villa thing where you just...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Did you see him playing that with the Razer Naga with the
no,
you know, the motion?
No, I think I heard about it, but I never actually.
Need to watch the video.
Yeah,
it's like he cut down a bunch of highlights from his playing around with it, and it looks ridiculous.
Yeah,
because it's 3D headset, VR headset, and then these two effectively Wiimote nunchucks, which give you 3D grabbing and like you control. I don't know how they work, but apparently it looked like you could control individual fingers for like gripping. And you have these two like disembodied floating hands in front of you in this 3D world, and you can just go around and move these like Wiimote things to like pick up stuff in the world.
Hmm.
And, like, he was just picking up stuff and like setting it on fire and like throwing things off cliffs and stuff. It looks really interesting.
Hmm.
Really, really weird.
Is that all you have for news, or is there anything else?
Pokemon. But,
shit! Yeah.
Did you have something you wanted?
Just because I was just on the Giant Bomb forums and I found this story which is a bit weird and is only coming from one website as far as I can tell.
Okay.
From a couple of days ago, but I don't know if this is actually. Let's just call this speculative at the minute. But apparently Notch is no longer making.
Oh no! Yeah, this is true.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. This is the first I've seen of it at all. So Notch is no longer making that 0x10 to the power of C game.
Well, I say it's true because he didn't deny it when I was watching his live stream earlier this week.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Was he asked point blank or was he like...
So he was... he's taking part in the 7-day FPS at the moment.
Right.
Which is, sort of game jam style thing where you have a week to create an interesting first-person shooter.
Mm.
And I was watching him douche around with that because he was playing with Unity, and I've been meaning for a long time to start learning Unity. And I've actually been playing with that this week, and it's been kind of fun. I've actually got a little thing where you can run around and throw like tennis balls at cylinders and they burst into flames and stuff. But that's for another day. And yeah, he was making some sort of first person shooter in that. It was kind of interesting to watch him play around with that. But then also people in the chat were talking about, you know, OX10C, and he was responding to questions in the chat, and people were bringing it up back then, like multiple days ago, about, you know, have you dropped, you know, are you no longer developing OX10C?
Yeah.
And it did seem like that was the case. The only thing I will say is I'm not sure whether the bit about it being, you know, open, him considering to make it open source.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I don't know what's going to happen about
that.
Yeah,
the rest of the story is basically the community now takes over development of it, which is completely crazy.
Yeah, I mean, if he does throw the source out, I mean, it's not entirely impossible that the community could take up the development, but that's not saying, you know, the community is going to.
Yeah.
Or that there'll be one united focus on making it into a singular game. It'll probably get quite splintered if something like that does happen, and I can't imagine that'll be ideal. But I'm also not saying that Notch might be doing, you know, going dark on it, kind of like the Fez thing, just like, at a certain point, I guess if you get a lot of people asking you questions about this thing all the time, it's probably quite easy to say, no, I'm not working on that anymore, and then just continue to work on it in your own spare time. Without the pressure of having people, you know, bug you about it all the time.
Yeah, totally.
So I have a feeling it's more like that than that he's... Yeah.
I mean, if it is true that he's stopped, that is sort of disappointing. I mean, I'm not a massive like Minecraft fan. Like, I'm not really into that game at all, but I recognize that, you know, that game's massively popular, and like seeing what he would have done with a game set in space or on a spaceship would have been that would have been really interesting.
An MMO, no less.
Yeah.
About programming a 16-bit computer.
Yeah.
To fly a spaceship.
Yeah, that would have been really really crazy, but.
Yeah, he's an interesting dude.
Also,
watching him program is hilarious.
Yeah.
He was like ignoring every single good programming practice ever. And he did actually at one point say, don't program like this, kids. I'm just doing it for speed. It was kind of amusing.
Pokemon.
So the latest Pokemon trailer, I guess, that they've been releasing on YouTube constantly is fucking weird, is one way of putting it. Basically, they've announced, so remember ages ago there was that Mewtwo looking like thing that everyone was speculating was Mew 3, but people, it was confirmed, is actually somewhat a different form of Mewtwo. Well, Nintendo, the Pokemon company, I don't know who puts these videos out, but has come out and in this latest trailer confirmed how that works. So effectively, there's going to be this item called the... Oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, I think it's called the Mega Stone. I could be wrong. Which, you know how in Pokemon, like, Pikachu evolves into Raichu if you get a Thunderstone, and then it uses up the item. So this Mega Stone thing is an item that you equip on the Pokemon, kind of like you would give them a berry to hold in battle, and it would like heal a status ailment. And this Mega Stone allows Pokemon to evolve during a battle into a Mega evolution of their Pokemon temporarily for that battle, and then to return back to normal after the battle. Which sounds both weird and stupid, and it looks really, really stupid. Like, all the Mega Evolutions for the Pokemon look absolutely terrible, and I can't understand what the point of this is.
I mean, the point to me seems to be Pokemon with Diglettfingers, which is...
What?
Pokemon with Diglettfingers.
What do you mean, Diglettfingers?
I mean, fingers that are Diglets.
Is that what the evolutions
that
look
is
like?
That is the one picture I've seen of this new Pokemon, is Pokemon with Diglettfingers, which if they go down that path of just like
giving every Pokemon Diglettfingers,
yeah, well, just replace appendages with other Pokemon, like, yeah, that's something.
So did
I
it
can,
literally have
had Diglettfingers?
Faces?
Yes, they all had.
I need
they
to
all
see
had
this.
Faces.
To fucking see it.
I can't remember what it was called.
I need to see this.
I have a friend who's like obsessed with Pokemon, and he posts it on Facebook, so I'll try and find it. God, I'm trying to think of like other Pokemon that could be appendages. What are the little Oh man, what's Voltorb? Is that the one that's just like a ball?
Yes.
Okay. Well, how about like a Pokemon that's got two Voltorbs and a Diglett as their penis? That would be pretty amazing.
I don't.
Okay, I found it. I found the picture. Yes. I hope this is real. It sort of doesn't look real, but even if it isn't, it's still a pretty amazing picture.
Wow, this Pokemon looks fucking sketchy.
So yeah, if they go down that route, that's
Mega Ampharos, Mega Absol, and Mega Marwhale.
Great
Pokemon names.
Yeah. Did you get that picture?
I'm really sorry to announce that this isn't real.
It is. It has to be real.
Someone's taken the Mega Mewtwo picture and then stuck Diglett's.
No!
It's got Diglett's coming out of its head.
I haven't been around Pokemon for a long time. I don't know.
Everything about that picture is accurate, except for the face.
And the Diglett's.
And the two Diglett's coming out of its head, which don't exist. But the fingers and feet do actually look like that. They just don't have Diglett faces on them.
Well, what is the point in that? That's just
that picture's amazing.
Oh god.
Oh my god.
I wish that was real. I really wish that was real. Yeah, so like what, so are they just sort of like that but not as crazy, basically?
Yeah. But they all look shit.
Yeah. There's not like Pokemon coming out with other Pokemon.
Sadly not yet.
Well,
they haven't gotten to the point where you can fuse Pokemon together.
Yeah, that's silly. They should be at that point. How long's it been?
It's been
10 years or something.
It's been way more than 10 years.
Oh yeah, shit. Okay. Yeah.
Oh god.
13, 14.
Did the first one come out in 98? Or 99?
Right. First one was Pokemon Red, wasn't it? Or Pokemon.
Yeah.
Red. It came out in Japan in February 27, 1996.
In Europe
it was 1999. North America it was 1998.
Yeah, I thought it was 98 or 99 in English. Yeah.
No, well, all right, yeah, in English, yeah, yeah, but not in England.
No.
That's such a crazy gap between. That's like a year.
Yeah. Two. But I mean, I guess if they didn't know if that was going to pick up or not, it was one of those things where it was very, very late localization. Like, they weren't planning to localize it until, you know, they were like, oh, this is a thing. We should probably sell this in other countries.
3.5 years between Red coming out in Japan, coming out in Europe is insane.
Yeah, and then this year is going to be the first time they've ever released worldwide on the same date.
Huh. What's it? What's this new one called?
X and Y.
Okay.
They ran out of colours.
Yeah.
They got to black and white and then were like, fuck.
We've reached the end.
We've run out
of colours. Pokemon Alpha and Omega.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what the next ones are called. Although I'd be somewhat disappointed. Hey, Pokemon Z, that's going to be a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Pokemon. Oh, Pokemon.
I'm actually really excited.
Yeah, people still buy those games. I don't really blame them for just doing the same thing over and over again. Pretty much.
I don't know, it's kind of therapeutic.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Like every so often you're like, I could go for one of those.
Yeah, that's about the time
it takes for them to come out.
Yeah, but then I don't ever have the thing to play it on. So I'm not like, oh yeah, I'm going to totally buy like a DS to get Pokemon. Like, no, that's not going to happen, unfortunately.
I probably wouldn't have got the new Pokemon if I didn't already want to get like Monster Hunter and Animal Crossing and shit like that on the DS. If I hadn't already preemptively bought a 3DS.
Yeah. Oh, I guess that does us.
I think so, yeah. Unless you've stumbled across any news stories since.
No. No breaking news on Twitter. No. Fez is uncancelled or something, I don't know. That would actually be sort of awesome, but
I miss Phil Fish.
Yeah. He needs to be back on Twitter. Even if he's not making fares, just be back on Twitter and be crazy. Yeah.
Okay, that'll do it for this week. If you have any questions, as per usual, email us, themightyelectronicbox@gmail.com. Tweet at us at TMEPpodcast, and you can find us on iTunes as always. Say goodbye, John.
I need to poop. Yep.
Goodbye.
Yep. Can we please end this podcast? Because,
You take wild, ferocious dumps.
Oh, God. No, not really.